You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where the only avatar we like is The Last Airbender. And I mean the cartoon. Not the M. Night movie. Not that we've seen the movie to be able to comment on it. You know, someone left a really good comment on the podcast on Talkbacker this week. He said, "Hating stuff to be cool is such a cliche now. Tired of the negative Nimrods. It's a lot easier to hate on something. Such a base and easy emotion to muster. It's far more impressive and challenging to defend something you love." We agree, Revenge of Zod loves Maud, and that's why I'd like to make a special announcement. Next week will be the premiere edition of our Snyder series. Special episodes in which we'll discuss the works of Zack Snyder. Our first, we'll discuss who he is in his directorial debut, Dawn of the Dead. I hope you'll join us. But let's not forget about this week. Joining me, via Skype, live from Austin, Texas, Dan Yule T. Richards.
I hope that we give so much love to Zack Snyder that we get an officially signed restraining order.
At least then I'll finally have his autograph.
Exactly.
Also joining us this week, via Skype, live from Orlando, Florida, Elliot Rivera.
Woo! Hey, guys. Just remember, no pool party invitations from Bryan Singer, please.
You're not, like, under 12. What's the issue? Okay, we love Zack Snyder, but you know who we don't love? Clay Aiken. Let's see what he's been up to in the news with Daniel T. Richard.
And now for your live Clay Aiken congressional race update. By the way, the Midside Podcast is the number one destination for all Clay Aiken political news.
Can we just make him our number one enemy now? Can we just declare that?
He's too gangly to be our number one enemy.
Well, we hate Grantland and Clay Aiken.
That's true.
Just slap his face on a dartboard and we'll hang it up on the door.
Yeah, there you go. Grantland you go. Versus the Midside. It writes itself.
Yes. Poorly. So, Clay Aiken had got some news last week or the week before. Time is a false construct to me anymore. Where he went,
the Midside exists outside of time.
Exactly, because his Democratic opponent in the primary died, thus making him the nominee. Mm-hmm. Well, this week he's making the news because he wants to punch Ann Coulter in the face, at least according to Twitter. He tweeted in October 2012, "Anyone else watching Piers Morgan want to punch Ann Coulter in the face?" And then he deleted that tweet because he realized it would probably not play well on the news.
Because out of the people on Piers Morgan, when it's him and Ann Coulter, as obnoxious as she can be, she's the one you want to punch in the face.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty much a constant stream of Piers Morgan hatred for me, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But so, you would think Clay Aiken would be better at keeping things he wants to do hidden.
Yep.
Like men. So this is a little bit of old news, but in a certain sense is not, in that there were a ton of apparent tweets that he did delete, but for whatever reason he decided to leave this one up. Maybe he missed it and he recently deleted it, and then this is the thing about Twitter. Whether you have it up or not, someone is going to be able to find it, so you might as well just leave it up.
This is what we were talking about last week with the right to be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
People think because back in the day you said something and no one remembered it or it wasn't recorded, it doesn't count. But now, because everything's recorded, we have to be like extra careful or something. Yeah. How about just not be a douchebag? Like, the whole hating Ann Coulter thing, like, it's so cliche. Like, you're missing the point. That is what she wants you to do. She wants you to tweet, I want to punch Ann Coulter in the face. Why? Mm-hmm. Because then somebody else goes, oh, well, who's Ann Coulter? I hate Clay Aiken. If Clay Aiken hates her, she must be cool. You just did her marketing for her.
Exactly. You got her the attention.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. I think she could take Clay Aiken in a fight. I really do.
Wouldn't it be like who would snap in half first? They both look like they're malnourished.
Although Ann Coulter has some pretty big man hands, so.
Well, that's true.
One of the tweets that he deleted a while ago.
She's like Dikembe Mutombo.
Exactly. Rejected. One of the tweets that he deleted a while ago was, quote, playing drinking games with my brother now. We drink every time we see a black person on screen at the RNC convention. Hashtag sober as a Mormon.
This is why I hate Clay Aiken. Because he is such a simplistic thinker. Oh, let's make a joke about there being no black people at the Republican convention. Aren't there very famous and prominent black people in Republicanism?
Tim Scott, Condoleezza Rice, you know, there's a few. There are a few.
At least.
Mean, it's just off the top of my head. Right. Mia Love, what happened to her? Or Maya Love, I don't know what her name.
And Alan Keyes, the guy who sounds like Kermit the Frog.
Alan Keyes, Herman Cain, I think even Ben Carson was at the RNC.
Right, and who's the guy who used to play for the Steelers? Was it Lynn Swann? Is he conservative? Or is it a different one?
And wasn't the previous head of the Republican Party black?
Right.
Michael Steele?
Right.
Yeah, Michael Steele, that's right.
Right, so we've named a bunch, right? And then people are going to go, oh, well, it's like, you know, you have a black friend, therefore...
Yeah, the Uncle Tom accusation.
Right. But the point is, we're not talking about whether the races align with certain parties. We're talking about Clay Aiken's thinking. This is somebody who wants to represent his state in the government. And he thinks on such a simplistic level. And then he thinks he has a right to tell other people what to think and what's right and wrong when he thinks on a simplistic level.
Yeah, if you're going to be my overlord, at least be an evil genius, not an evil idiot.
Right. Say what you want about Plato, but at least he wanted philosopher kings to rule us.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get a lot of thinking from Clay Aiken, let's just be honest.
Yeah, he's going to finish.
And by the way, I am not convinced that his opponent died of natural causes. I don't care what the media says. Just call me Alex Jones. I think that there was foul play.
All right, well, there's your conspiracy theory for
the week. For the week, there you go.
Speaking of conspiratorial myths, there's been a lot said about serial killer Elliot Rodger, who murdered 6 people near Santa Barbara, California this week. And there was some debate about whether or not we were going to touch on this topic in the mid-side. But once we sort of started realizing how much the media and the social media has distorted this news topic, it became pretty evident that we needed to talk about it.
Yeah, because talking about him doing this, I mean, that's not really something worth, you know, mocking or even us meditating much on, because it's a horrific thing and there's not really much to say besides, wow, that's fucked up.
Yeah. Although we could have taken 5 seconds to say that, which would have been fine. But there are basically some myths that are being perpetuated by the zeitgeist that we wanted to take a moment to address, and which I was originally, my attention was brought to them through the website twitchy.com. And when I read these myths, this is what really made me want to do this story, because I read them and I thought, wow, I bought into every single one of these myths. I had integrated them into the story that I'd constructed in my head about this whole situation. And so I figured many other people have as well. So the first myth about this killing spree is that it was motivated exclusively by this guy's desire to harm women. And you see this perpetuated in, there's some tweets embedded here. All talking about using the hashtag, like, yes, all women, because the profound hatred of women by people like Elliot Rodgers is literally killing us. That was by Elizabeth Plank. Sophie at Disilluded said, I wish people and media would call the Elliot Rodgers shooting what it is, a hate crime. And then my favorite tweet about this from at Monica Foster said, Elliot Rodgers, an apparent racist and son of a Jewish Hollywood filmmaker, kills six sorority girls, and she cites the website JewishDirt.com.
Well, I'm glad you put the Jewish thing together with the hate crime comment, because to me, this whole thing is about oversimplification, and the way they say it's a hate crime and we should call it that, to me, that doesn't do justice to the victims or what happened. That, to me, would be like calling the Holocaust a hate crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Absolutely. It's really, you're right, it's very much an injustice, because the level of sort of psychological disturbedness of this and the thought he put into it, it's more than simply he just hated women.
Well, more than simply it's about sex.
Yes. He was evil. He wanted to perpetuate harm on
yes.
people.
Yes.
And it's
wicked,
horrific.
He was a wicked person. I mean, I read a little bit of what he had been saying. Like, I guess he had a video out or something, but he had written something as well. I mean, the guy is just, he was evil. The world didn't do what he wanted it to do. And he was going to, you know, it was just blatantly wicked and rotten and corrupt. I mean, it's ugly, you know, it was ugly. And so, I mean, the people that want to categorize it as just a hate crime, as being racist. And by the way, this is how the world is operating right now. The world is collectivizing everybody. It's racist, you know, if it's blacks or if it's gays or, I mean, and even in that one woman who talked about son of a Jewish producer. I mean, it's like the world wants to combat hate by collectivizing rather than focusing on individuals. I mean,
right.
This is a problem.
Right. We want to fit it into these neat little boxes and create our stories. And Daniel, it's really interesting to me that you admitted up front that you integrated all these myths and wrote this story in your head. The reason I didn't is because there's an article, or this article mentions a book, and it's Columbine by Dave Cullen, which I read, and it's one of the best nonfiction books I've ever read, because it gives a detailed account from all perspectives of the Columbine massacre. And the main thing that it exposes is this narrative the media created of unpopular versus popular, right? The trench coat mafia, the goths versus the popular jocks, right? Mm-hmm. And what it shows is, and I don't remember one of the shooters, but there were two shooters, right? And one of them was in and out of basically rehabilitation, because he was whatever, I don't know the term, psychopath, sociopath. I don't know how people use those anymore, because I'm not a mental health professional. But he was one of these people. He was very manipulative, and he was planning to do this for a long, long time. So the media created this narrative, just like they're doing with this Santa Barbara killing, when really it's as much about how messed up this one person was and how he was able to fall through the system and we weren't able to identify it. But we would rather tell the story of, oh, well, he was unpopular, taking revenge on the popular kids.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so the reason this misogyny is a myth, and so the misogyny itself isn't a myth, but the fact that it was his sole motivator is a myth. He also detested men, including his roommates and apparently even his younger brother. And some of the reason he detested his roommates were not because they were, you know, masculine guys who got all the girls, but because they were geeky. And because they were sort of lower males, according to him. Additionally, four of the six people he killed were men. Three yet-to-be-named men who he stabbed to death in his apartment. And then he killed two sorority sisters who he shot. And then he shot one male clerk at a store. Before he killed himself.
Part of the manifesto that Elliot's talking about is he said that he is going to show everyone why he is like the Uber male or whatever.
Right.
Like, he's the exactly. ultimate male, and he's going to express his dominance by killing people.
Exactly. And so, you know, the second or third, I can't count, myth is sort of what I just mentioned, which is that the whole,
the
I thought he shot six people, and I thought he shot six women, but it turns out that he actually stabbed half of his victims to death, which is, on the depravity scale, it's even higher than killing someone with a gun, in my opinion. But so I didn't know that. I thought he shot and killed people. And then the last myth that we want to cover here is that he's being talked about as being white and white privileged. And, you know, at Erase This Tweet said, if Elliot Rodger was a brown-skinned Muslim, his actions would be described as terrorism, but because he's a white misogynist, he's just a loner.
Right. So
but he's not. white.
What they're complaining, right, first of all, he's not white, and it's like Elliot said, they want to racialize it. But this tweet is complaining that we compartmentalize things and put things into neat little boxes. And rather than saying, let's not put him in a box at all, he's using it to complain that the box for white people is unfair.
Yeah, exactly. He was half Chinese, in fact.
And there's another thing I would add to that also, because there's been some talk, at least among like the conservative Twitter, about him being the son of a Hollywood producer, you know, comments about being about Hollywood kids and how, you know, drug culture and things like that and how they're corrupted. We don't know the story. Like we don't know anything about how he was raised. We know his dad is a producer. I think his mother just works in the industry as well. But we don't really know anything about how he was raised. So I think a lot of people who want to start attacking the father, you know, because of his industry, I think that's not really called for either.
Right. And likewise, yeah. Some people are trying to say he's right wing for certain things when that's once again, oversimplifying, putting into boxes. It's just, you know, it's a tragedy. Treat it as a tragedy. Try and figure out who this person actually was. Don't participate in this parroting of these simplistic things which might not even be true about him. We saw this with the Virginia Tech massacre too, where that guy's Facebook profile was found immediately and it turned out to not even actually be the killer's Facebook profile, but just because he was Asian and had guns, people thought it was him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, similarly with the Boston bombing, right? There was basically a guy that the media had decided it was, and he was an Indian student who had gone missing. And for basically 24 hours, that's who they perpetuated as who this was. And
well,
it turned
in
out
Newtown,
to be completely
in Newtown, remember
false.
They mixed up the brothers' names.
Yeah.
It was Adam Lanza, and then they're calling Ryan Lanza. I mean, so even there.
It was, so a lot of this, but yeah, I mean, I think overall, some of the more politically motivated people just want to jump on any tragedy to sort of foster their own beliefs and to reassert their own values, which is bad. Don't do that, especially when you don't know all the facts about a given situation.
That's what happens when you put everything into neat little boxes. Necessarily, you have to identify with one of those boxes, and then it becomes very us versus them. This is my box. That's your box. And anything that happens that's bad, I'm going to use that as evidence of why your box is bad and my box is good.
Yeah. And if your box gains something or if it succeeds in something, then my box had to have lost something or,
right.
you know, some
right.
variation
you did
of
not,
that.
Your box did not gain it legitimately.
Yeah, you took it from us.
And that's sort of summed up in this final tweet by I don't even give his Twitter handle because it's so disgusting. He tweets, so Elliot Rodger was a lonely, depraved NRA right-wing lunatic virgin obsessed with controlling women's vaginas. Got it. Mm-hmm. What?
They're never right wing. Can we dispel that myth? All of these killers, when was the last time a killer has turned out to be a right wing killer? Lanza was not a killer. Jared Lochner was not a killer. He was not a right winger.
Right-wing.
You know, that's what I meant to say. But I mean, it's never a right winger. They've all been communists or they've been liberal Democrats. If they've never been someone on the right. So let's dispel this myth, please.
I mean, I don't even care, even if they turn out to be right wing. Like, it doesn't matter what political edge of the political spectrum you are when you're doing this shit.
Yeah. I mean, I just would like in them to stop calling it right wing as well.
Yeah. Or politically motivated.
But, you know, the thing that basically all these people have had in common is that they have some sort of mental disturbance, some sort of mental illness. So maybe we should be talking about how we can address these issues in our culture versus guns or right wing, left wing, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So. On to using boxes to get your way and push people in a certain direction. Harry Reid, our favorite U.S. senator.
He's run out of things to do, apparently.
Senator McDirtbag, along with 48 other lawmakers, have called on the Redskins to change their name. That's right. Half of the U.S. Senate has put pressure on Commissioner Roger Goodall to address the controversy of the Redskins' name, saying they must remove the racial slur from the name of one of its marquee franchises. Senator Bill Nelson said The NFL can no longer ignore this and perpetuate the use of this name as anything but what it is, a racial slur. We urge the NFL to formally support and push for a name change.
So in this article, the NFL people and the people who run the Redskins say that it's a name of respect, that they're showing the strength of the Indian culture, the Native American culture, right?
Yeah.
So I want to know, am I the only one who finds it ironic that a bunch of self-important white people are inserting themselves into the Redskins culture and telling them it's backwards?
There is some irony there.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
The really bad thing about this was that they chose to vote on this rather than voting on what to do about the VA scandal, about the Veterans Administration or Veterans Affairs. So, I mean, that's really what, to me, what really kind of got me upset. And Senator Coke, you know, Coke sucker, Harry Reid, needs to just chill out. First of all, I mean, the guy is off his rocker, okay? I mean, he just is. He needs to go to the cornfield. But first of all, just leave the Redskins alone. Just leave the name alone. Stop with this crap. And you don't.
You should make a video like "Leave Britney Alone." Leave the Redskins alone.
You know, I'm not as pretty as him, as Chris Crocker. So, but yeah, they just need to knock it off. They've got actual work to do with the VA scandal, with a lot of this other crap. I don't know why the hell they're wasting their time talking about the Redskins when there are other things that they really do need to focus on right now.
Because it makes them look good.
Right. And so I agree with Elliot here. This is probably the most important issue to me, which is that it's none of your business. Go away. Work on things that matter. We pay you to sort of resolve some of the issues that affect us all politically. Do that, not this.
Exactly. Protect our rights. Don't infringe on them. Protect our veterans, you know, the only people with any legitimacy to get anything from the government, the people who actually protect us.
And work for the government.
And work for the government. And work for us. So take care of them. Why? I don't know why they're digging around with this crap.
Right. And so along these lines, but thankfully not governmental, no governmental involvement, Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban is in trouble and being called a bigot and racist because he said that he knows he's prejudiced and bigoted in some ways and has to learn to fix it. So the guy admits publicly, he says in a speech, if I see a black kid in a hoodie on my side of the street, I'll move to the other side of the street. If I see a white guy with a shaved head and tattoos, I'm going to move back to the other side of the street. None of us have pure thoughts. We all live in glass houses. And then he went on to talk about how we have to learn to deal with our prejudices, admit to them, and come to terms with them if we're going to ever fix them. And the outcry was immediate that he is a racist and a bigot in the same vein as Donald Sterling.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, I was at the gym, and I wasn't listening because I had my headphones on, but I was reading the closed captioning, and there was a guy on ESPN legitimately arguing that Mark Cuban is expressing the same opinion as Donald Sterling. It's just that Donald Sterling was hate and Mark Cuban was fear. So I was just wondering when the next logical step was going to come. If they're the same thing, then take Mark Cuban's team away too.
Right. It is ludicrous that we have such thought police sort of waiting to jump on people for the slightest even whiff, the chummy whiff of hatred, bigotry, racism. You can't talk about race. You can't make any comments about race. You can't make any comments about sexuality or gender without being called a hate monger. And it's incredible. This guy comes out and says, hey, I actually do have some prejudices and I want to work through them. And people jump on him for being evil.
Well, that's what I don't understand. He knows all this. He has to, right? He's a smart guy. So what was he trying to accomplish by saying this? Was he trying to improve race relations? Because all he really did was make himself a target. Hey guys, guess what? Black people scare me sometimes.
Right. So the follow-up to this story is that Mark Cuban did take to Twitter to semi-apologize, which I think is a mistake, because the moment you apologize, that smell of bloody chum only increases for the race fetishists. He tweeted, in hindsight, I should have used a different example. I didn't consider Trayvon Martin and his family, and I apologize to them for that. But beyond apologizing, and these are multiple tweets, by the way. Twitter didn't change their rules for Mark Cuban. Beyond apologizing to the Martin family, I stand by the words and substance of the interview. I think that helping people to improve their lives, helping people engage with other people they may fear or may not understand, and helping people realize that while we may all have our prejudices and bigotries, we have to learn that it's an issue that we have to control, and that it's part of my responsibility as an entrepreneur to try to solve that.
So. This just drives me nuts. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, he's right. We all have our prejudices and we all have our bigotry. But I mean, the truth of the matter is all of it comes down. They're not really upset about the prejudice or the bigotry. What they're upset about, and I've said this before, is judgment. They don't want you to judge, you know, so they pass it off, you know, because when he's talking about kids in hoodies or, a white guy with a shaved head and tattoos, you know, I mean, we grew up in a culture where if you watch a TV show, if you watch a movie and you see one of these guys, chances are they're not a good guy, you know, and that's the culture we've been brought up in. That's what pop culture has reflected. Many people, I'm sure their experiences have reflected this. And because of their experiences, these are the concepts that they've formed. These are the conclusions that they've drawn. Whether they're correct or incorrect is immaterial, but they're not going after that. The people who want Mark Cuban to apologize, they're not interested in the prejudice aspect or the bigotry. They're upset because he actually made a judgment. He's witnessed things in his experience and he's drawn conclusions and they don't like the conclusions he drew.
Right. Bleacher Report, which I don't know if you read, Justin or Elliot, actually came out and said that this all sounds kind of racist to them, which is beyond belief to me. I'm just flabbergasted in it. And I guess I shouldn't be, but I'm continually just amazed at the depth that people go to call other people racist. I'm blown away every single week.
Yeah, I'm confused at this point. I really don't know when it's okay and when it's not okay to talk about race anymore.
I think it should always be okay.
But if you don't talk about race, then you're blind to the differences that make people awesome.
Everything is awesome. Yeah. I agree. I think talking about race is a good thing.
Oh, I was being sarcastic. I was talking about how multiculturalists use that argument that we need to celebrate our differences, but then if we talk about our differences, they call you racist. So I'm just confused at this point. I literally am.
Yeah. Well, I think we should stop talking about race and start talking about robots, since they're the future. Can you be robotist?
Good question.
I mean, wasn't there a lot of stuff in TNG about Data and that?
Yeah, it's true. Good point. Disney is releasing a new movie called Big Hero 6, which is based on some Japanese anime, and it stars a fluffy white robot, from what I can tell from the trailer, and a quasi-Japanese-looking kid with spiky hair.
So did they not bother to rename it from the Japanese name? Big Hero 6!
No, they apparently didn't. So the protagonist is named Hiro Hamada, and he's trying to beef up his homemade robot Baymax, who looks sort of like a baby Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. And
is
in the trailer,
Baymax as a reference to Michael Bay and Big Robots?
Probably not, but maybe the people in Japan do some fun things with names. One of the things Disney's getting a little bit of heat on is that they made up a fictional city to have this take place in, because the original takes place in Tokyo, but we know that wouldn't sell in America. So they made up San Fransokyo, which is a mixture of Tokyo and San Francisco, which I'm excited about, but again, race fetishists screaming racist at the top of their lungs.
They're screaming racist?
Yeah, we don't have to bring that up again, but they are. But anyway, the trailer looks amusing. It was kind of endearing and funny. It's like a fluffy robot and he's trying to stuff him into this homemade armor to make him like a badass robot, but he's too fat and it keeps flying off him.
Yeah, so. But the trailer said from the creators of Frozen and Wreck-It Ralph, and they just lost me right there.
Really?
No, I'm being over the top. I mean, okay. Wreck-It Ralph is a good movie. It's very, very beautiful. It's very immersive. So that actually speaks well of this movie being very immersive. I just didn't like the end of Wreck-It Ralph where it was like, hey, awesome movie, communism. But, you know, that's me disagreeing with the movie. That's not it being a bad movie. It's a good movie.
That's how I felt about the movie Brave. I mean, same thing. Beautiful movie. It's lovely and it's funny. And then at the end, boo, self-interest is bad. You know, it's bad. You join the collect.
So these are good movies. We just disagree with them. But Frozen isn't a good movie.
You are in the minority opinion there, sir.
I understand I am, but I watched it and I was just like, no.
Look, I'm a company man. I work for Disney. I'm going to back my company. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Sell out.
I got to, man. They provide my livelihood.
You just like it because it's about coming out of the closet.
Oh, please. To the blaze. Comment section with that.
We'd relegate you to blaze. That's funny.
To the blaze. Go to the comment section of that. No, but I mean, I'm just thrilled that, you know, I know we're supposed to be talking about this movie, but Frozen has brought Idina Menzel to the public consciousness, and that makes me very happy.
Yeah, and it once again features Bearclaw in a role. Why is that guy not blown up yet? Do you know who I'm talking about?
What?
No. Who's Bearclaw?
He played Bearclaw in New Girl, and he is the guy who voiced Olaf the Snowman.
Oh, Josh Gad. Yeah, the guy from Book of Mormon.
Right. And when I saw Book of Mormon, I saw it in the LA tour and it was, you know, it wasn't the original cast. And the guy who played his role, I was like, you know who'd be really good at that? Bearclaw. And then I looked it up and he actually played the role. And I was like, why am I not in casting? So yeah, he's a talent.
Cast
I don't
him
know
and then a bunch of hot women. But, I'm looking forward to Big Hero 6 only because I like animation and robots, which is why one of my favorite movies ever is WALL-E, despite the message.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see Disney kind of, even though they own Pixar, they're trying to get their own brand back up there as the ultimate in animated movies.
Yeah, but I think that Disney does need to work on its messaging, though. I mean, like, one of my favorite movies, Pixar movies, is Up. And the message of Up is the importance of picking yourself up no matter how bad you feel defeated, no matter what heartbreak you go through, you have to continue living. Pick yourself up and continue searching for values.
And that's why Up is brilliant, right? Because they concretize that in the title Up. And then what's the main image you think of when you think of Up? You think of the house with balloons. And that's how you concretize an abstract theme. It's just so well done.
It is perfect. And The Incredibles was really good too because I think that they really drove home the idea that there are evil people and that it's okay to not only fight against evil, but to be brilliant on your own terms. You know, don't hide your talents or your skills, you know, hold on. So I think Disney just needs to work on its messaging, because I think that the people I think people are responding differently to these movies than they did to Pixar.
You're right. Disney's movies tend to have a little bit more of a conventional message than Pixar movies. But the one exception to that rule is actually Disney's first, full color 3D CGI film, which was Meet the Robinsons.
Mm-hmm.
Meet the Robinsons is about, a kid who's an inventor and basically his inventions always fail.
Yeah.
Like, even though they're really cool, in the end they always fail. And basically the theme of the entire show is like, failure is okay. Like, as long as you learn from it and keep going and don't give up, it's fine. Like, some of the coolest things ever have come out of failure if you keep going.
Such as time travel.
It has time travel in it. So, I love that movie. It's one of my favorite Disney animated films, but.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Big Hero 6, Warehouse 13, that's about all I have for a transition. I hope it works for you because it's time for TV with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made for TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. Season finale season is upon us, which means we get some interesting finales for the year and finales for the entire show. So I would like to talk about a couple of those today. The first, just to sort of give a brief highlight of something that I think is spectacular and people should be watching, is Hannibal just finished up its second season. And this is a show that is taking on the similar vein that most shows are nowadays, and that's the evil that exists, right? It's taking on the psychopath or serial or sociopath, whatever the fuck the word is, mm-hmm. Hannibal Lecter, in the same sense that we have Dexter, we have Francis Underwood, we have Heisenberg, all of these evil characters. But the difference is they're portraying the show as how evil seeps into everyone else's life and how they fight against it. So when we look at the main characters of Will Graham and Jack Crawford, these people who work for the FBI, it's about how they're trying to fight Hannibal. And season two was all about how they were trying to fight him by playing his game. So season one was about how Hannibal is trying to create this bromance with Will Graham and trying to turn him into a serial killer. And at the end of the season, Will gets framed for all of Hannibal's crimes. So season two starts out with him in jail, and he is trying to prove his name. Eventually, he proves his name is clean, and he then goes forward and he tries to catch Hannibal by pretending that Hannibal is succeeding. Hannibal is actually seducing him. He's pretending that Hannibal is actually seducing him into becoming a serial killer. But the whole point is to basically entrap Hannibal to admit he's a serial killer. Well, the season gets to the end, and you wonder, well, how is this all going to pay off? Is Will actually good? Is he bad? And the whole season ends, as a true horror should, with Hannibal stabbing Jack, stabbing Will, stabbing the woman that basically Will loves, and stabbing the girl that Will tried to save, and all of them are dead or dying, and you don't know who's dead and who's dying, while Hannibal gets away on a plane to France. So it's the definition of a cliffhanger, and it's the definition of a thematic culmination, in that if you try to deal with evil, evil's gonna win. As the season got to the end, it was, well, you think you're playing Hannibal, but is Hannibal really playing you? And he's the titular character, he's the villain, and he was really playing them. So I just thought it was very well done, and I think it's worth watching.
It's a lot of stabbing, though.
It's Hannibal. It's a lot of stabbing. It's a lot of eating people who he stabbed.
And a lot of Chianti, if I remember correctly.
And fava beans. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask if he stabbed him with a fork.
No, he didn't stab them with forks. He has in his kitchen, he had a bunch of giant knives, and he was fighting people with that.
Ooh, like swordplay?
Well, like mini swordplay, like midget swordplay, like if Brad Williams and Peter Dinklage fought with appropriately sized swords.
Mm-hmm.
I see, yes. Now, Yoda was pretty good with a mini lightsaber.
Yeah?
Like a cheese cutter sized lightsaber. Anyway, I don't know. I'm not into this show. Why should I watch this show, Justin?
Well, I hinted at it earlier, where I think it's the best portrayal I've ever seen of good people trying to figure out how to deal with true evil. Whereas most shows revel in the evil. You look at a House of Cards, you look at a Breaking Bad, it revels in the evil and it simply says, this is the evil. Whereas in Hannibal, you have the characters of, especially Will and Jack, and Jack Crawford is played by Lawrence Fishburne, also known as Morpheus. And I think they show how good people really struggle with dealing with true evil. Because the season ends with the FBI coming in and telling Jack, we're going to relieve you of duty because you're going after this truly evil person and you can't prove it within the law that he is evil. And Jack, who's in charge, is trying to figure out, well, how do I deal with this? I know he's evil, but I want to follow the rules, but the whole purpose of me doing this job is to stop evil. Likewise, Will Graham is a criminal investigator who he can go to crime scenes and he goes to his mind palace in the same way that
Holmes does.
This is very popular nowadays, all these characters that do that. Mm-hmm. And he goes to it and he sees and he figures out the motivations. So he has a lot of figuring out, you know, what's the line between me and an actual evil person? Where is that line? Which is why season two, is he being seduced or not, works really well. So it's just this really intelligent, well-done depiction of how do good people deal with pure evil.
All right. Not sold, but closer to being sold.
Also, Brian Fuller's a genius, so you should support all of his work. It's also
I'll see you again in a week.
The miracle of this show is that it keeps getting renewed. So it gives us hope.
I asked my mother if she watched Hannibal, because this is exactly her type of show, and her response was, if it ain't Anthony Hopkins, I ain't interested.
I like it better than Anthony Hopkins. I think this is...
How dare you.
Whoa.
I think the actor who portrays Hannibal does it so well. I just think the acting all around is phenomenal. The writing's phenomenal. The directing's phenomenal. It might be Brian Fuller's masterpiece. We'll see. Hopefully it gets his 7 seasons that he wants.
Interesting.
But let's move on to a show that is not considered a masterpiece, and it itself got 5 seasons for some unknown reason, as it didn't seem like it would last one when it first came out. And that's, I'm talking about Warehouse 13. Now, Daniel, you haven't seen Warehouse 13, right?
Not a single episode.
Oh, man.
Elliot, you watched all of it like I did, right?
Oh, yeah, from the beginning, man. All right. From the beginning.
If you think I was being controversial with the stuff I was saying about Hannibal, I'm going to be really controversial here. Ready?
Okay, go ahead.
I think the Warehouse 13 finale, or Warehouse 13 series finale, was better than and outdid the Lost series finale. I think they were trying to accomplish the same things, and Warehouse 13 did it better.
Well, it's not hard to do it better, is it?
Well, that may be true.
You basically could have filmed 6 monkeys throwing their feces at each other and just put it in a church, and it would have been a more amusing ending than Lost.
Okay, well,
I think that was the controversial comment there.
That was more controversial than what I said, but...
I don't know. I don't meet many people who liked the ending of Lost.
Oh, so Daniel, what happened during the 6th season of Lost? Give us a brief, you know, summary of the whatever-atory they were working with.
They were on okay. How do I explain this without sounding like a complete idiot? We were led to believe that there was some sort of flashback slash forwards slash flash sideways parallel universe that was going on in the 6th season, similar to all the flashbacks and flash forwards of the previous season. And we were told literally from the first episode of Lost that they were not in purgatory. And then basically at the end, we find out all these flash sideways slash parallel universes was actually a super mega flash forward to the when they were all dead and sort of waiting for each other to come and join them so they could enter the afterlife together.
Right. So it was
so they were in purgatory.
Right. That's why I call it whatever-atory, right? It's not really purgatory, but it's technically purgatory. So it was all on their deathbeds. And what happened was they thought they were living a parallel life, but when they woke up by remembering what happened in their important person in the whatever-atory, they were able to realize and come to peace and be able to move on, right? So that was basically Damon Lindelof's way of having a character-driven finale and saying, I'm going to give closure to the characters. But in order to do that, he completely forgot about what?
Plot.
Plot and setting. Mm-hmm. The setting was just, hey, we happen to be all here together. So they basically could have all been in Subway for 6 seasons, and it would have been, hey, we met all these people in Subway. They were most important. Let's move on together. So he completely dropped plot and setting to do that. We saw this through Christian Shepherd's famous quote, Jack's dad from the finale, right, where he said, the most important part of your life was the time that you spent with these people on that island. That's why all of you are here. Nobody does it alone, Jack. You needed all of them, and they needed you. So as we see, you could have just subbed in any word for that island, right?
Mm-hmm.
The most important part of your life was the time that you spent with these people on that in that strip club. In that strip mall.
Right.
Yeah, they certainly needed you and those singles in your pocket.
Right. So we see the error here. Now, the interesting thing is Warehouse 13 did a similar thing, right? Where Warehouse 13 was this whole show based on unexplained mysticism, where when there's an epic event in human history, some sort of artifact or item is infused with some special power which does something crazy that's dangerous, and these people collect these items and make sure they're not a danger. So,
yeah, it's like it's psychometry basically. If you know, it's the idea that a physical object, not inanimate, can be imprinted with some sort of emotion or some sort of charge, and it can affect the world. And so their job is to go around the world and collect. And they have a special purple ooze that they use to neutralize it when it gets out of control. And so it's an interesting premise, but you know, kind of silly.
Right. So it's like if Zack Snyder, when he was making 300, one of the helmets, or the shields, one of the shields got infused with something. They would have to put that in the purple goo to stop it from being a danger to the world.
The Spartan cry,
so
or something like that.
Collect things like the +7 mace of armor or whatever.
Right, exactly. And in the last episode, they reveal that they have the round table from King Arthur's time there. And the round table's power is it can show the agents their most important memory from their time serving, because they thought the Warehouse 13 was closing, Warehouse 14 was going to open in another country.
So yeah, they were going to be out of a job, basically.
Right, and their whole lives were over because their whole lives became the Warehouse, basically. So, just like Lost, they were giving character closure by showing their most important moments. And they even, when they did the flashbacks, when they put their hand on the round table, they used the same effect showing the mass flashbacks and the mass memories. So it was interesting to me that it was even visually similar.
But it wasn't a clip show, which was really cool.
Right, it was actually a very clever way. I thought they were just going to show clips, but they actually created new scenes that were the person's most epic moment. So it was
the 42nd Street was awesome.
Are you referring to the Jack the Ripper?
The tap dancing.
Oh, the tap dancing, yeah. I really like the Jack the Ripper thing they did too, where they showed that the reason Jack the Ripper was able to do what he did was he had an artifact.
Yeah.
But when they showed each of these moments, the interesting thing about it was it wasn't focused on remembering another person. It was focused on the challenges the Warehouse presented these people made them better people. And this was demonstrated through a few quotes in a few moments. So the first quote was one of the two main agents, right, Micah said, "It's not where you are that defines you, it's who you are. It's the decisions that you make." And that was that was the major thing that was dropped by Lost, right? We can talk about how, you know, they forgot about the island, they forgot about the plot. But when Christian Shepherd says you needed all of them and they needed you, nobody does it alone, that is a stark contrast to it's who you are, it's the decisions that you make.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
I just think that's phenomenal. Likewise, Artie, the major, you know, he was the scientist behind the Warehouse, right? He understood it all, was talking to, like, his surrogate daughter who was, like, young and grew up on the show. And he says, "You just have to stay true to yourself." And she replied, "Even if it means being a little selfish." And I was floored when I heard that. I was like, what? Yeah. Really?
Selfishness is a virtue.
Yeah.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought that?
This is one of those things, right, where I've loved this show from the beginning in the same sense that I love Franklin and Bash. And I'm kind of like, well, it's not very well done. And, you know, it's kind of weird. Why do I respond to it so well? But I think Franklin and Bash has that same underlying theme where they're ultimately just fighting for their values in the same way these characters are.
Yeah.
They're always going after Franklin and Bash, and they always do what they think is right. So it may not be the best written show. It may be kind of cliche and a procedural, but on an emotional level, I really respond to it.
And Claudia, I mean, her character, it's nice to watch a show and see how a character has grown. A lot of shows try to shoehorn a character's growth in the final season. It's really nice to be able to track it throughout the whole run of the series and to really feel like there's an accomplishment with her.
Well, right.
You know what I mean?
Claudia, I thought she was the best written part and best acted. I mean, I think they really lucked out when they cast Allison Scagliotti. I didn't really like the show for the first 6 episodes, but then when they introduced
until they brought her in.
And then the show really took off. But yeah, her arc was probably the best written thing, the best written character. I think that her, more than anyone, she embodied this view of the Warehouse improves you and makes you a better person and relying on your own mind to make the world better. She had a really epic moment in season 5 where I was like, that's an action hero, where the music swelled and she defended the Warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I'm talking about the bad writing of Warehouse 13, when you look at Pete's arc, I feel like they did what you just said, where they shoehorned his arc in at the end. But the interesting thing is they sort of made him the same character as Jack Shepard from Lost, where he was worried about being fixed. And he was all upset, if I lose the Warehouse, I'm not fixed the way I was. You know, Jack needed himself to be fixed, so he tried to fix the world. Mm-hmm. And when they showed his flashback, they showed everything. And the thing that I thought was important was, at the end, it wasn't about, you know, in the same way Jack flashed back to everything, and it was, oh, you're a better person because you met all these people. It was, you're a better person because you became a better person. You rose up yourself, and all of this defined you and made you better than who you were. So I just thought it was really interesting, the contrast there, and the way that they concretized the end of Lost in Jack, and they concretized the end of Warehouse 13 in Pete. The whole episode culminated with him. So just to see the contrast there.
And can I just say, I'm not going to spoil it for Dan or for anyone who hasn't seen it, but really, the way that they handle the will they, won't they is very, very smart. I like how they handle that. The will they, won't they kind of.
Well, that was one of the things about the bad writing too. Like Community, we saw in their series finale, maybe unless it gets renewed on Netflix or something, they really hung a lantern on that with Jeff and Britta, right? How when shows head towards their end, characters start acting in ways they wouldn't normally act, such as falling in love. And I was kind of annoyed they were doing that with Pete and Micah this season. But like you said, the way they executed it in this final episode with having Pete be like, oh wow, this became my entire life, you understood why he would live or why he would love Micah. Because if he really did become a better person and this is what's most important to him, the love came from that. Whereas in Lost, they reversed it, right? Oh, well, we're here all together all the time, so we love each other, not I'm the best I've ever been in my life, and I love you because you helped me be that.
Yeah, it's not causeless. You understand, they really took the time to build the relationships on Warehouse 13. So how they feel about each other is very genuine because you can trace it to its causes, I guess you could say.
Right, whereas in Lost, the reverse was the love in itself was a cause, which makes no sense, which is why I think many people were upset about the finale, such as you, Daniel.
Exactly.
So I'm willing to say and be controversial and say Warehouse 13 is one of the best series finales I've ever seen. It was very satisfying.
It's certainly the best one this year because How I Met Your Mother was disappointing. Psych, disappointing as well. So I think Warehouse 13 thus far in terms of series finale, I think that they've been the best.
I agree. I agree with the statement. So here's an interesting question. What would it look like if Jack Shepard from Lost posted on Yahoo Answers? Find out next when we answer a couple of questions that could have been asked by him as a teenager. Just another question. Just another answer, I won't pick it. And
just another question. Just another answer, I won't pick it. Okay, so first question for Yahoo Answers. Something's happening to my friend. Help! ! First of all, I'm not trolling. Okay, so my friend and I are library monitors where you do work in the library at school. So once my friend looked in the keyhole from the storage room in the library, it's a pretty big hole, and she saw a red eye, and since then, bad stuff have been happening to her, like the devil is trying to do something bad to her. So my friend keeps having dreams of her house, and there's snakes inside surrounding her, and a wood man saying this is payback, this is revenge, and she asked her mom if she had the same dreams, and her mom has had the same dreams. And she saw, like, this man, she actually wrote like, wow, this man standing in her backyard looking, but she could only see his back. And after that, the next day, her cat died. And bats, they took the time to write a sad emoji.
That's the worst part of all of this, right? There's nothing freaky people showing up. It's the cat dying.
And bad stuff have been happening to her. And yesterday, she came to me and said that she drank a glass of water, which tasted pretty bad and made her sick, that she had to sleep with her parents just in case. What? And the next day, she came to me quickly and told me that someone gave her a threat letter and it said, Die Iman. Iman, I guess that's her name. I have done black magic and remember the water you drink. It was chlorine. You're going to die. Run, Iman, run. And she got freaked out and is scared. And when we went to the library to do some work, she started choking like when someone is choking, she spelled it choking you, and then a few minutes later she fainted for about a minute and me and a friend needed to drag her to the chair and we tried to wake her up and a few seconds later she did. Please help. She also had this dream but I can't fit it in.
Wait, I misread this because I literally, this is how bad it is on Yahoo Answers. I thought when it said we tried to wake her up and a few seconds later she did, I thought that was a typo for died, so I thought they were trolling the whole time. Because I thought they meant D-I-E-D.
Well, I mean, goodness knows the grammar is certainly not reliable on this one. All right, so
I have two things. Right, first off, go ahead. Did we learn nothing about looking through keyholes from Alice in Wonderland?
Apparently not.
And the second thing is, what kind of black magic makes you have a threesome with your parents?
That black magic woman. That kind of black magic. or Barry White. I don't get any of this. I tried to follow it in the best sort of giving it the most liberal interpretation, and I think it's pure and utter nonsense. So I think she should just call the Ghostbusters or a therapist. And
I think Mom and Dad need to. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I'm done.
No, I think Mom and Dad need to get a straitjacket and maybe some Thorazine and just lock her up in the padded room.
Yeah, she's seeing things.
Or write down everything she's seeing and make a movie. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, yes. For a minute there, I thought this was M. Night Shyamalan trolling the internet with his next movie.
This is quite an imagination.
We gotta pitch this at the next pitching session. Justin, take notes.
Yeah, do you remember when M. Night Shyamalan did that movie about the devil in the elevator?
Well, he didn't do the movie. He came up with like the concept and the basic story, and somebody else wrote it and directed it. But it was very similar to this, yeah.
Yeah, same thing. So, no, I disagree with all of it. It should go away.
I don't think this was agree, disagree. I think she said, please help.
No, like, yeah. No, I disagree. No.
I think you should just keep having threesomes with your parents. I think that's the best solution.
For most things in life.
Okay, what's next? All right, what is going to happen with me with my health? Well, let me get to the points. I'm a pretty weird kid. I drink soda too much instead of water, which I don't like at all, so I am dehydrated. IDK, how to spell that, sure. I stay in front of the computer too much for hours. See, he spelled too much here, but when he said I drink soda too much, he misspelled it, so I don't know what's going on there. But I wear glasses and I don't go out too much. See, he misspelled it again. Just only when I have to go to school. I drink 2 Nescafes a day and 1 or 2 teas a day. I don't eat all kinds of food. I don't eat too healthily. Well, the only healthy things I eat are fruits like apples, grapes, pears, etc. I'm only 15 years old. I just want to know what is going to happen to me. Is my health at risk too much?
I love how he knows how to spell words he thinks he doesn't, but he doesn't know how to use commas.
Yeah. I mean, he's 15 years old. I mean, what 15-year-old kid, you know, eats healthily? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, come on. When I was 15, when I was 15, that was almost 15 years ago. Jesus. You know what? We're going to again
pass and it we're to done.
You. We're going to pass it to you.
No, same for me. Almost 15 years ago, but... So what's going to happen to his health is that he's going to turn into an American. And that's about it, because that's how it works. First of all, I have no hope for our future if these are the children that we get. None. We're screwed. We might as well fucking party while the boat is sinking and be done with it, because let's be serious. Yeah. Number 2, eat a vegetable once in a while. Cut down the soda a little bit and go outside for an hour a day. That's all. The rest of it is you're 15, and Elliot's right. Nothing is going to happen to you because at 15, your body can process rocks.
I disagree. This is what's going to happen to you because it happens to all of us. You're going to die. All right?
Eventually, sooner or later, yeah.
No one gets out alive.
You're going to die. Deal with it. Try to find more interesting shit to do with your life.
I just find it funny that, like, he said, he lists all of these things that he does. I'm like, obviously he knows that these aren't good habits, and then he still feels compelled to ask, what's gonna happen to me? I'm like, well, what the hell do you think is gonna happen to you, you dipshit?
Well, no, he's not sure. He's looking for someone to say it's okay. This is all reading, like, is my health at risk too much? He just wants someone to say no, and then he can go, oh yeah, I can keep doing this.
Oh, he's a sanction.
Well, for the sake of evolution, I just wanna say it's perfectly fine. Keep doing it. In fact, increase. The end.
That's the Mark. There's a Mark Cuban quote at the end of the article you didn't read. I don't want to silence people. I want people to keep talking so I know who the stupid people are. Go on Yahoo Answers, Mark Cuban. Go on Yahoo Answers.
Okay. All right. Now we need to move on to a serious subject about, you know, mental stability, mental illness. Is it possible to be a psychopath without having competitiveness? Okay. My girlfriend is socially intelligent, quote unquote. His quote's not mine. She predicts things that are going to happen socially before they even happen. She says to listen to what people say, how they react, facial expressions, body language. She knew two of my friends who she had only met once, and both of these friends had separate partners, but she said something was going on between these two friends, and she was right. Sometimes she thinks she is a sociopath because of what happened in the past. Basically, her friends weren't really her friends, stole from her, lied to her, betrayed her, etc. And she is a bit of a believer in karma because she was too nice to do anything about it at the time until she realized that these people weren't really her friends. When the tables turned and she was able to sometimes plan things to do to her friends. But she says it was mostly good timing or karma. Okay. Then she went through a list she went through a bit of a bitter stage before she met me. I kinda understand because I am / was like that too. I liked to cause drama because I hate attention seekers, liars, advantage takers, etc. Just like my girlfriend hates them. So I start drama because I hate drama starters, sure. But it's calmed down now since I've met my girlfriend and got out of the crowd I was with. Now, we did some research on sociopaths, and a lot of quote-unquote honest sociopaths say that they prefer to use the word sociopath instead of psychopath. Also, a trait of psychopath is competitiveness. I am very competitive, but my girlfriend is not. So he's a psychopath, the girlfriend's just a sociopath. Is that what we're going to take away from this?
So I think the entire episode has been leading up to this question. and that's because it forced me to look up the differences between sociopath and psychopath. And basically, according to the internets, there aren't any differences. So a psychopath, by definition, is a person suffering from chronic mental disorder with abnormal or violent social behavior. And a sociopath is a person with a personality disorder manifesting itself in extreme antisocial attitudes and behavior and lack of conscience.
Right, I think that's the difference, is the lack of conscience, maybe? I don't know.
So a sociopath has no conscience, and a psychopath does.
Okay. But he's very violent.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Sometimes she thinks she's a sociopath because she Googled it. Sometimes I think I'm a unicorn because I Googled it, and all you need is one big horn.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't count then. Unless you're like a baby unicorn. So, stop Googling things.
But isn't this kind of a case of projection, though, guys? I mean, like, you know, he's saying, you know, she might be a sociopath, and then he, the questioner, maybe it's a she, the questioner starts kind of displaying the same traits in a way. Like, he says, but I'm like that, too. So is he really using the girlfriend as a means of judging himself? Maybe he's worried that he's a sociopath?
So you're saying Norman Bates wrote this question, and he actually is talking about his split personality?
Possibly. Why not? We don't know the people who write these questions.
No, my point about stop Googling things, which I really want to harp on for a moment, because
can't we just mock the crazy people instead?
No, we will. Don't worry. Chamber it. Is if you think you are suffering from something, be it a physical illness or a mental illness, do not go to Google unless it's to look up a doctor's phone number. Call a professional. Have them diagnose you before you start seeing that you have every symptom listed under porphyria.
I'd actually go a step further than what you're saying.
Kill yourself?
No. I meant broader with the whole don't Google things. Don't Google things and then think you know about them. Like, I read the Wikipedia entry on psychopath, therefore I know what psychopath is. I read the Wikipedia entry on Plato, then I know all of Plato's philosophy. Only use Wikipedia, only use WebMD as a source for sources to get a more detailed view of things.
Good one. Mm-hmm.
All right, so speaking of competitiveness, I think let's move on to the next one. I fight with my good friend, period, !! So this all happens yesterday. He is not really my best friend, but we do get along with each other, so I'm just going to say we are good friends.
Fuck that, I'm done. I mean, get roped in. If I clicked on this, then it's like, I fight with my good friend. Oh, he's not really my good friend. Fuck you. Get out of here.
So yesterday I came to our class and one of my friends said to me that Bill, my good friend.
I thought he wasn't your good friend.
wanted to kick me out of his Clash of Clans clan. Sorry. Sorry. I got so pissed off that I started asking and spying them. Okay. I realized that Bill and his friend wanted to kick me out without knowing any reason. So he bullied another classmate to agree to kick me. I guess to kick me out. So I got pissed off and decided to kick all of his members and then leave. Now we are not talking to each other. My other two friends are also a victim of his kicking. We three and some of our friends are pissed off with him that we mock him in front of him. We don't feel guilty because we know he deserve it. Deserve. Okay. Do you think I should say sorry? All of my friends disagree with me to apologize to him. I'm fine with not having him get along with me.
I think every single person associated with this story should be actually kicked.
Yeah.
Does that mean me and Elliot as well? I don't. Where does the line?
No, we should be kicked. And anyone who listens to this podcast this week should be actually kicked.
I think all of our collective IQ points just kind of decreased a little bit.
I mean, if somebody kicked us in the face, we would have a real reason for our IQ points dropping, okay?
Exactly.
But all of this over getting kicked out of a Clash of Clans clan, for Pete's sake.
A clan clan.
A clan clan, I guess so.
You know, it's a clan clan.
Is that like the can can?
A little bit. So, I guess we had the equivalent of this as children. You know, Tommy wouldn't share his Master Splinter figure with me, so we kicked him out of the club. But it feels a level stupider when it's things like, you know, Jane wouldn't give me a life in Candy Crush, so I don't want to talk to her on GChat anymore. Like, it's this is literally becoming an abstract. We are living an abstraction, which is really funny to me, but at the same time depressing because again I have no hope for the future. So
and horrifying.
Yeah, if they were actually in a clan, and there was a clash of those clans, and someone was kicked out, I might be interested. But this is a
like
stupid
if it were
video
Celtic
game.
Period. Yeah.
Right. If they were Celtic, if they actually wore kilts, I would care. But they don't, so I don't. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does.
Okay. Kill yourself. That's my advice.
They need help. Alright, last one. Why do I feel like I'm the only one to know what life is about? ? Now here's the thing. This is part four of a four-part serious study, apparently. But I could not find parts 1 through 3. So this is part 4 without a 1, a 2, or a 3 at all.
Thank you.
So, yeah, just keep that in mind. There's context we're missing.
So are there Dinobots and Mark Wahlberg and we can ignore Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox?
We can ignore Shia LaBeouf. Always ignore Shia LaBeouf. My brother telling people, I hope he doesn't become a writer. I hope he doesn't become a writer. I still hate him, and I'll never forgive him for changing so much. Now he's more calm. He doesn't go out as much as he did in the past. He doesn't go out anymore. I don't care for him anymore, as he created a gap between us, and I do not owe him ... I guess he meant shit, but
without the first three parts, this character turn for the brother is just completely unearned.
I know, really.
It's so
no
much
foundation.
Telling and not showing.
I know. No concretizing. But he's describing a mature person, so apparently he's upset that his brother has matured, I suppose. All right, so go to hell if you actually someday read this message. A message I would send to him. Okay, sure. If in paradise I could go play Xbox and eat Doritos all fey with some weed, I stopped smoking because it caused me too much damn paranoia. Then I discovered that it was because I always thinking of money and not enjoying my friendship. What the hell is wrong with this guy? With this, like, ketchup, mayonnaise, poetry. And they told me I could hear Gangsta Paradise on replay all day long. And, of course, unlimited internet. Gangsta Paradise.
Wait, is that the Coolio song?
Yes! I mean, it has to be. What else could... Okay.
I thought it was just an island filled with bitches and hoes.
I want to give this guy an alternate heaven, which is actually hell, where everything is slightly different. Like, instead of Gangsta's Paradise playing, it's Amish Paradise playing.
Weird Al.
Well, he says in paradise, so I'm assuming, I guess he's, what, Muslim? Is that what he's talking about?
He doesn't mention
any virgins, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think you can figure out anything about race or anything from this.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any concept theory of this.
All right, there's more. Hold on to your hats. But IDK.
All right, I'm holding on to it.
What's up? But IDK, I don't know what's up. So no, I won't kill myself.
Damn it.
Well, good for that. I feel like a retard for not being productive. Well, that's good. Productivity is a virtue. I work as a cashier. I pair wines with people's super.
He's a soft liaison.
At last, I tried to do my outmost best, and I still feel like life is giving up on me. I have pretty high standards for girls, even though I'm pretty confident and easy to approach. And then he ends it with, I love y'all, have a good day. The hell?
I think you mean you stop smoking weed because the crack is still clearly in full effect.
Can you imagine him as a sommelier? Drink this rosé, bitch. Oh my god, I love it.
I always get amazed by these because I think these people are like 13, and then he has a job where he pairs wines with people super.
Yeah.
Super. So you know, like, what
life
it is
giving up on me. Like, no, maybe you're giving up on life, you dipshit.
Maybe people bring their superhero to this guy, and he says, this is the wine your superhero would like.
Yes, Mangria.
Well, they're super, like the superintendent or something, I don't know.
What?
You bring your bosses, you tell them who your boss is like, and he tells you the wine to buy your boss.
That's a terribly specific job. I imagine he wouldn't make a lot of money.
That's why he's not being productive.
The demand is not very high. At least from what I can tell. What was the original question?
The question was, why do I feel like I'm the only one to know what life is about?
Yeah, that's what I thought the question was.
Yeah.
And then there was that rambling.
Remember, this is only the fourth volume, Daniel. We still have volumes 1 through 3.
I forgot.
To really get the full picture, you know, the
great
full portrait.
Peer-reviewed journal of Yahoo Answers. life, the universe, everything, what? 42. That's my answer to this question.
Yeah. So not 42. Bad. Psychopathology, witchcraft, and now this dude. So yeah, Yahoo Answers was very good to us.
Was it?
Oh my god. Google? Never mind.
I have a question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I feel like the only one who doesn't think stupid shit is a big deal? It's time for the non-crisis of the week. For the non-crisis, of course, we again turn to someone said something on the internet that everybody blew out of proportion.
And it wasn't Mark Cuban?
No, it wasn't Mark Cuban.
Mm.
So we get this news story from CNN Entertainment with their clever headline of Pat Sajak catches heat for global warming tweet. I mean, it's the heat, global warming, it rhymes. Somebody thought they were very clever with this headline.
How witty. It's like Oscar Wilde. Gosh.
Basically. So what was the tweet?
The tweet that Pat Sajak said, and it actually, his intent becomes more clear, it becomes clearer, more clear, Jesus, Justin, it becomes clearer in light of what we've talked about on this podcast, actually. He said, I now believe global warming alarmists are unpatriotic racists knowingly misleading for their own ends. Good night. And he just, like, dropped the mic.
It's better than dropping a vowel, I suppose.
Yeah. Now, of course, what did this do?
Oh, I'm sure the internet exploded hatred.
He trended on Twitter. And climate scientist Michael E. Mann at Penn State tweeted this clever gem. Hey, Pat Sajak, this isn't the Wheel of Fortune. If we lose this game, it isn't just one person's misfortune. All humanity pays the price.
Oh, God.
Others fight back with ridicule. Others fought back with ridicule. On one hand, 97% of scientists. On the other hand, a guy that got his job because Chuck Woolery came across as too intellectual.
That's kind of funny. So, first of all, backing up one step. Michael Mann, isn't he the guy who made the hockey stick graph, which we now know was basically completely falsified?
You would be the expert on this one.
Pretty sure it's the same guy, because everyone started calling it the man-made hockey stick graph, where he basically showed temperatures increasing exponentially over the next 100 years, when real data shows that that is not even, like, wrong, but so wrong as to, you know, incur hatred from all math teachers of the third grade.
It's so wrong it's right, Daniel. So wrong it's right.
It's so wrong that someone should beat him with a hockey stick, is really what it is.
I mean, I'm not so concerned with about the whole global warming thing. I'm just concerned about the fact that no matter what someone tweets, if a bunch of people don't like it, it becomes like, kill him, pitchforks and torches.
What I want to know is, when did CNN become twitchy? Like, stop trying to copy Twitchy. You're not, I mean, posting the tweets and everything. It's just knock it off.
Okay, so of course Sajak responded to this.
Yeah.
So first he tweeted, sometimes it's fun to poke a stick in a hornet's nest just to hear the buzzing. So basically, you guys all just got trolled by the host of Wheel of Fortune. Then he also said in a statement, of course I was joking. Just mocking the name calling that is directed at global warming skeptics within and without the scientific community. Apparently this is a pet issue of his. This article says he has a habit of mocking climate change. He's tweeted about Al Gore fundraising and his nephew being a tooth fairy denier. So apparently Pat Sajak gets bored hosting Wheel of Fortune, and like in between people like guessing, he just tweets out annoying things about climate change.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's been drunk on that show more than one time. Mm-hmm. It's got to get pretty freaking boring to do that for so long. And it can't be like the pinnacle of what you want to achieve in your career, right?
But he's a known conservative, so anytime he says anything, people want to tear him down. It's just...
I think the best tweet of there was, say what you will about Pat Sajak, but that guy works 35 days a year.
I think he works a lot more than that. They show it most weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, they film multiple shows per day.
That's true. I mean, it's a very funny tweet. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, Pat Sajak, met the guy. He's funny in person. He's short.
I love his, like, Twitter fights with, like, Greg Gutfeld. They're just the best, wittiest things I've ever seen. They are epic.
I mean, he's pretty funny in his own right. He should be doing stuff other than Wheel of Fortune. He's talented. But definitely a non-crisis in my book, because I would only be upset if Vanna White was tweeting this kind of stuff, because she's just a pretty face. She needs to not be speaking.
Ooh.
Isn't she like 60?
I don't know. How old's Pat Sajak?
Like 160?
Come on. Wheel of Fortune has done more for women's rights. They've kept Vanna White her whole career. They didn't replace her with a younger one. She was turning letters when she was pregnant.
It's very strenuous, I know.
All right.
But now but look, this is what I don't like about Vanna White. Okay. No, I do like Vanna White, but this is what I don't like about her job. She doesn't even have to turn the letters anymore.
Yeah.
She doesn't even have to exert the effort to move a physical object. She literally has to walk up to the screen and look like she's pressing it, and someone backstage changes the letter. Through a computer.
I mean, I always knew computers were going to take our jobs.
But apparently not Vanna White's job, anyway. Mm-hmm.
Are we ready to put a cap on this?
I'm done. Daniel, you good?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
Well, I learned that hating stuff is totally uncool. And if you're going to hate on stuff, you also have to love on stuff. And that's why we're going to love on Zack Snyder pretty hard.
Not in Giggity. The way that sounded, though.
How did it sound to you? Sounded yeah. completely heterosexual to me.
Sounded giggity. That's it.
He is a pretty handsome man, I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn? Mm-hmm.
I learned that somewhere out there in the internet, volumes 1, 2, and 3 of this great masterpiece is out there just waiting to be discovered.
Hmm. Philosophy of the future.
And I learned that I have no idea when it's appropriate or inappropriate to talk about things anymore. So I'm pretty much just going to say whatever the fuck I want from now on. Because it seems like no matter what, you're going to cause a controversy. I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and this concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough this week, take a step back and witness the farce. I can't take much more.